Hello, I'm Kiplin Primus, a joint project between the Local Take and the Fulton DeKalb Hospital Authority allowed me to attend the HLTH Future of Healthcare Conference in Las Vegas last month. This inaugural conference was on the confluence of technology and healthcare. One of the most impactful panels, Your Zip Code Supersedes Your Genetic Code, included input from Robert Brook, a health consultant from the RAND Corporation. I spoke with Mr. Brook after his presentation, and he shares with us what he thinks the future of healthcare should look like in our country. So the RAND Corporation has this health focus, and you've talked quite a bit about education in health. Now, you know, we know zip codes in health, we know race in health. Why is that education component so important, and why should we start focusing on it?
I'm not a person that is the greatest expert in the educational system in terms of trying to answer that question. But clearly, to manage your needs today, you need education. But even people that have low levels of education and are poor can benefit from an integrated approach. One of the physicians I'm training is running a small study that is trying to take people that are poor when they come in for their visits and teach them how to manage their wealth. This may sound like an oxymoron, but even poor people have a little bit of extra money. And if you teach them just the basic principles of how to deal with this, they begin to get a little bit more security in their life and be able to function better. That will have a spillover effect in everything that happens to them and their family, including their health.
Now, we're talking about health and about advocating for your own health. And a lot of the people in the U.S. have no idea where they are standing in their health. They look good, so they think they're good. How can we convince people that they do have to take an active part in their health care?
I think that's a hard question as well. I think that that's going to take time. It's going to take what I believe is communities to fully participate with health professionals in that kind of quest. Nothing we do anymore should be done on people. We never should decide as a bunch of wise, old, or whatever men what to do for a community we don't understand. It's got to be totally partnered. One of the things I did a long time ago when I was running RAND Health is I took a very sophisticated statistician with me out into one of the poorest areas in Los Angeles with a group that we partnered with, Healthy African American Families. And I said, you got to teach them to present the results of this study. Not just to introduce us and say we're happy to have you there and clap, 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 but they have to understand the numbers. And it became absolutely clear after the fear of the statistician disappeared that that was a doable task in a short period of time. And it's much, much better when the people in the community get up and present what the studies are and what it means. And there's much, much more learning. I'll give you another example. We gave a bunch of gang members in Los Angeles cameras. And we said, here are cameras. We'd like you to return them at the end of the study. But why don't you take a picture of what makes you feel depressed? Because we know there's a huge level of depression. Why don't you take a picture? And they did. Some things would take the act of God to change, but it was amazing how many small things there were. Walking to school, there was a garbage dump that would take exactly one day of three people to clean up the garbage. And every time you walked by it, it smelled and it made them feel bad about where they lived. It is possible to do these kinds of things. We don't have to wait for the millennium to come. We actually can, do some of these things if we do it in this kind of a community participatory way with everyone feeling empowered and respectful. But it comes back to this concept of, do we want to do it? Kindness, tolerance, and where we're going.
So we also know, and it's been emphasized, that in the U.S., we spend more than any other country, and we have the worst outcome. How can we and will we turn that around?
Well, I hope so. So the first issue is that one of the work that we've been doing for a long time is to identify care that is not needed. And by not needed, we mean that the benefit of the care is about equal to the cost of the, not the cost, but the harm of the care. It has nothing to do with cost. The benefit is equal to the harm. And then there's another group of care where the harm is actually greater than the benefit you get. We got to develop a community movement to get people to say, we won't tolerate this anymore. If this is $500 billion, that's a lot of money that could be spent on something else. We got to say to our providers, as patients, as people, we don't want equivocal or inappropriate care. We only want care that really makes a difference. There are lots of other things we can do. In medicine, one of the least known things about the effectiveness of what we do is how often we have you come back. We have you come back at a year. No good reason other than it's a year and the sun and the earth have gone around each other. So why don't we make it 13 months and use the extra money to do other things that people in communities know absolutely what needs to be done? Or if you have a different philosophy, give it back to people so they can decide what they want to do with themselves to have pleasure. I just don't want to waste that money in medical care in terms of what's going on. Now, everybody needs an insurance product. Because when you get sick, you need insurance. And you don't know whether you're going to get sick. So if you ask me on the healthcare side, the first thing we need to do is we need to figure out finally how everyone's going to have health insurance. And that's doable if we want to do it. Every other developed country in the world has done it. We have chosen not to do it. And it's now time to bite that bullet and make it happen.
And stop paying the price, because we're paying for it anyway.
Well, yes and no. We do pay some of it for it, but we still have, it would cost more to insure all the people that need insurance at this moment. Now, if over time we make everybody healthier because we engage in all these kinds of activities, great. I'll talk a little bit about the environment, not about climate change, but I have a doctor that works with me at RAND, who graduated from the University of Pennsylvania Medical School. And when she went to medical school a number of years ago, there were actually four places between her home and where she had a class that sold junk food and sugar products. She went back just recently and found 54 places on the path. Why, when you go to a hardware store to try to paint your house, is the last thing you see on the counter food that is full of sugar? We have got to finally recognize that we are people. And instead of blaming us for our health habits, we have to do something about the environment, making the environment safer. We just have to do it. We know that we have faults and we're imperfect. We just have to figure out how to get together to make the environment safer. We can do all that. These are all doable things if we want to do it as a community. Now, lastly, I think that tying the compensation of business CEOs to improving the health of the community in which the business is, not all the compensation, but at least part of it, is not only a good business policy, but it's a good community policy. Because if you have a business in a community that's healthy, then you're going to attract more employees. They're going to be happier. They're going to do a better job. You're going to make more money. And at the same time, you're doing something that will make America better in the future. And so I don't see any reason why we shouldn't do that. I think the same thing with everybody that works. Wouldn't it be neat if part of your raise that you got, no matter who you work for, was demonstrating that you improve the health of a stranger, make it even a little bit more difficult. A stranger that's not the same race or gender that you are, and wouldn't that result in motivation to change things, more importantly than going out and buying a wearable, which a lot of people have, but the bottom line is, wouldn't that make a bit of bigger difference?
I think that is great if we were actually all incentivized around healthcare, because again, we'd all benefit from a healthier community.
Yeah, I totally agree. And not only domestically, but foreign policy. What should be the outcome of everything we do in the world? Well, I believe we ought to leave whoever it is that we are dealing with healthier than they were before. Why? If we beat them in war and leave them totally distraught, that's not going to, in the long run, do any good. If we develop trade policies and in the long run they become less healthy, even if we become healthier, they're just going to get angry and frustrated and not do us any good. So I tend to believe that the outcome right now of what we ought to strive for is improved health. And we know how to measure it. We know how to measure social health, mental health, physical health, physiologic health. We know how to measure all these things. And we ought to try to have a new platform that basically says we're going to improve the health, not only of us, but of the world. And that's how we're going to behave. And I don't think that's Pollyannish. I don't think that's a fantasy. I think we now have the know-how, the resources, and the intelligence to do it. If we do it together, if we actually respect people of different socioeconomic groups, different race, different genders, different sexual orientations, and respect each other, and really say, look, we're going to treat each other with dignity.
Humankind.
Yes, how humankind.
So what about transparency? That's another challenge. People in one state may pay different things for health care than people in another state. We've got people who are doing actually medical tourism, going to Costa Rica for dental treatments. What about transparency and cost so that people know what they're getting?
I absolutely agree with that. But let me start with transparency just in health. I think the public, and this is not going to happen, none of these changes are going to occur unless the public makes it happen. We gave people the vote because people demanded it. We desegregated schools because people demanded it, marched for it. Is there enough action here that people will really demand it to make the change that they want? And the change would be transparency. So you ought to be able to know if you get your care at, let's say, health system X, I won't name any. That health system ought to be able to tell you, given all the technology we have, on a daily basis, in the paper, little column, that says, how many people are in the health system? 10 million? How many people died yesterday? I don't know what the number is. How many people had a preventable death if medical care was better? And what kind of medical care could be made very simple? And if they didn't have a preventable death, how many people had a good death? Because dying horribly is terrible. And how many people died in a high-quality way? That ought to be public information. Then we could get a cost. And I think cost is important, too. But you first got to decide what the product is. Unfortunately, when you listen to too much of the conversation about people in the health business, including doctors from hospitals to companies, you would think they're in the finance business because all they talk about is money. There's not a single place in this country now that can provide that information that I just said to you. And if you choose a plan or a hospital, you ought to be able to know that.
Even rate restaurants, fast food restaurants, everything gets a rating, and for whatever reason, healthcare just escaped.
Yep, I told them. Well, there are ratings of healthcare, and there are people that do that. CMS rates healthcare institutions. There are the USA, US News World Reports. There are places that do this, but the simple, basic things of what you want to know is not really there. And it could be there. We have the technology. We have 50 years of health services research that knows how to do this. This can all be done. It won't cost the whole GDP of the country to do it. The bottom line is it could be done if we really want to do it. what's missing so far is that there's not been a popular movement of people to say, this is how I want you to behave. And many of these institutions are not for profit and are public and get public money. And, you know, we just have been ignoring them. And part of that is, as a doctor, is that I am just overwhelmed with how the brightest people fall apart when they get sick. We are so into thinking that we're going to be immortal that even people that are brilliant by, you know, academic standards can't even figure out how to verbalize the simplest question because they're so emotionally tied up in being sick. So we've got to deal with these feelings and emotions, and we can't expect people to be able to get rid of them. Even if we explain everything to them 2,000 times, emotions and feelings have to be part of the process of what we are doing and dealing with. And we need to do this with both data, and we need to do it in a way that helps people cope with these terrible emotions and feelings when tragedy strikes.
And that's also why it's good to be a little bit prepared before you really get sick. But it seems to be that human nature to think you're immortal, to ignore the hurt until it becomes, you know, really bad. It just seems like a real human thing to kind of just want to keep moving.
Yep, I totally agree with you. Now, there are two different strategies. So let me talk about opt-in and opt-out. And again, I'm not the one to make this decision, but we need this kind of a discussion. In the days when we had to ask people, because it was a different kind of a test, whether they wanted an HIV test for AIDS, we started out by first asking them whether you'd give me permission to draw it as a doc. And 15 or 20% of people would say yes. Take the same question and turn it opt-out. Say, I'm doing a lot of tests on you. You can opt out on any of them. One of them is an HIV test. 80% of people said, yes, go ahead and do it. You know, I'm not going to opt out. Same thing happens with end-of-life care. Instead of saying, I need to opt in to planning and thinking about end-of-life care and what I want, I think we ought to start out with an opt-out strategy and basically say to people that as your healthcare provider, I'm not going to do things to prolong your life and do all these things when you're suffering and everything, because that's our strategy. You can opt out of that strategy. You can tell me that you want to, you know, suffer and do all this kind of stuff, but you're opting out of it as opposed to opting in. That's the way the human mind works. I'm not enough of a psychologist to tell you why it works that way, but I can tell you that that's the way it works. And so I tend to believe we ought to deal with an opt-out strategy when we come to these things so that we really do know what people really want in a different way than if we have an opt-in strategy.
That's wonderful. Robert Brook, I just want to thank you for taking some time to share with our listeners today about health, and thanks so much for everything that you're doing here in the future of healthcare. Thank you.
Thanks for you, and I hope this all works out and as well. I would only end with one thing. I think I have grandchildren now. I've been in this field for 50 years. If we really don't tackle this question that every person matters and that we can combine these silos that we have created between education, the prisons, the healthcare, the public health silos, and everyone just wants to protect their own turf into some common ground led by people in a people's movement, my grandchildren are going to be in trouble, and I don't want that kind of world. At age of 16 or so, my first speech, I won an optimist contest. So I want to remain optimistic and say to your listeners that we can make a huge difference, but we got to really want to make a difference and do it. And we can empower ourselves to make that happen. And all these institutions, whether they're new institutions or legacy, I don't think it really much matters. Just needs to have a different goal in mind when we work together to try to make this a better world.
Thank you. Thank you so much. We've been talking about the future of healthcare with Robert Brook, a panelist from the HLTH Future of Healthcare Conference that was held in Las Vegas last month. Thanks for listening. You've been listening to The Local Take, community engagement from 91.9 WCLK, Atlanta's Jazz Station. You can leave comments or questions on our community engagement line at 404-880-6211 or email kiplinprimus@gmail.com. Past interviews are available for on-demand listening at WCLK.com. The Local Take is produced by Kiplin Primus, Rob Maynard, and Jami Wellman. WCLK is a proud licensee of Clark Atlanta University.